Hello and welcome to the Whispering Gallery. I'm Suzanne Nicolaisen, and we're going to have a little prequel to our Gory Mystery episode that's coming up. I was well on my way researching our hero, Edward Gorey, with an eye toward the mysteries surrounding him. I mean, did he really have fur coats? Just how big of a reader was he? Cream cheese or butter? What artists influenced him? And these artists crossed mediums and theatrical stages alike. And the very Gory Mystery? Was his work really macabre, or was there something else going on? Something perhaps not so dark. If not horror, what genre does his work fall into? What was his intent? I hope you'll listen to this prequel and then join me next time as we fall down the rabbit hole to investigate. The book we're going to read in our prequel is called The Doubtful Guest. The book was written and illustrated by Edward Gorey. It has a yellow cover, and on it there is a balcony with an urn at the end of the balcony railing, and there is a creature standing there. They have likened it to a penguin, but it is not a penguin. And it sort of looks like it has a rat's nose, but it is not a rat. This is a creature, one of those that came up from Edward Gorey's imagination. It's wearing a striped scarf that's floating in the breeze behind it, and white Converse sneakers. The only colors in this book are on the cover, and it's yellow, black, and white. The Doubtful Guest by Edward Gorey. Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, Boston and New York. And on this page, it shows the creature looking in the window on its tiptoes with his scarf on, but blowing in the breeze. The first page, there are five souls. One man in his dressing gown, a child kneeling on the floor with a book, two women, one of them standing in shadow, and a man sitting in a chair looking away. The man in the chair has a mustache, and the man in his dressing gown has a beard. When they answered the bell on that wild winter night, there was no one expected and no one in sight. In the art, we see that three of the people have gone outside to look. One of the women, her dress blowing in the wind, the man in his dressing gown also being blown in the wind, and the man with the mustache at the railing, looking out over the garden. The child and one of the women remain inside. The child is peeking outside the door. Then they saw something standing on top of an urn, whose peculiar appearance gave them quite a turn. Four of them are there, facing. Four of them are outside, looking at the creature who is standing on top of the urn. It looks like night is falling. All at once it leapt down and ran into the hall, where it chose to remain with its nose to the wall. And the picture shows the creature standing there with his nose on the wall. And the people, I'm not sure if they're a family. You can make up all sorts of things. It could be a boarding house. It could be cousins. It could be travelers. It could, you know, many number of things. So the people look like they're wondering what to do about this. Standing just aside from a doorway with a curtain drawn back that would partition the room. It was seemingly deaf to whatever they said, so at last they stopped screaming and went off to bed. The picture shows them going upstairs. Night has fallen and it's dark, and the creature stands there with his nose against the wall. It joined them at breakfast and presently ate all the syrup and toast and a part of a plate. The man with the beard is now wearing a suit, and the mustache man is also in a suit. One of the women in a striped dress, and another woman is wearing a dress. The child is at the table, and the creature is holding a plate with bite marks out of it. It wrenched off the horn from the new gramophone and could not be persuaded to leave it alone. The picture shows the man with the mustache. I believe he's holding the recording tubes. The child is standing near him, and the woman is trying to get the creature to hand the horn back. She's frowning at the creature, and he's kind of hopping away. It betrayed a great liking for peering up flues and for peeling the soles off its white canvas shoes. He's standing at the fireplace looking up, while he's absently reaching down to his high-top sneakers to work on peeling off the soles. One of the women is standing nearby watching. At times it would tear out whole chapters from books or put roomfuls of pictures askew on their hooks. The picture is of the bearded man holding what looks to be a newspaper while seated in a comfortable chair. There are books on shelves behind them, and the creature is seated on the floor, a book in his lap, and he's tearing out pages that are flying away. Every Sunday, it brooded and lay on the floor, inconveniently close to the drawing room door. So this picture shows the mustached man trying to come out of the door, but he's stuck because the creature is laying on the floor blocking the door. The man with the beard is trying to get it open. The child and one of the women are standing nearby. Now and then it would vanish for hours from the scene, but alas, be discovered inside a tureen. The picture shows the two women in what appears to be a butler's pantry. One is holding a dish of food. The other, it appears to have taken the lid off the tureen, and the creature is reclining inside the tureen. It was subject to fits of bewildering wrath, during which it would hide all the towels from the bath. The picture is of the man with the beard, is wearing his robe again, heading into the bathroom, and the creature looks like he's jogging away, arms full of towels. In the night, through the house, it would aimlessly creep, in spite of the fact of its being asleep. The picture shows the creature with his eyes closed, tippy-toeing down a hallway that is dark. It would carry off objects of which it grew fond and protect them by dropping them into the pond. The man with the beard is in a warm coat with a fur collar and cuffs. There are three other figures, and the creature is at the pond, dropping a pocket watch and chain in. It came 17 years ago, and to this day, it has shown no intention of going away. The picture shows the five souls. The man with the beard has grayed. The two women also are showing gray hair. One looks like she has wrinkles now. The man with the mustache has lost some hair. And the boy is now as tall as everyone else and has grown. The creature is looking away from them all, seated on a decorative ottoman footstool. I'll read the book through without describing the pictures, just so you can get the cadence of the rhyming words. When they answered the bell on that wild winter night, there was no one expected and no one in sight. Then they saw something standing on top of an urn, whose peculiar appearance gave them quite a turn. All at once it leapt down and ran into the hall, where it chose to remain with its nose to the wall. It was seemingly deaf to whatever they said, so at last they stopped screaming and went off to bed. It joined them at breakfast and presently ate all the syrup and toast in a part of a plate. It wrenched off the horn from the new gramophone and could not be persuaded to leave it alone. It betrayed a great liking for peering up flues and for peeling the soles of its white canvas shoes. At times it would tear out whole chapters from books or put roomfuls of pictures askew on their hooks. Every Sunday it brooded and lay on the floor, inconveniently close to the drawing room door. Now and then it would vanish for hours from the scene, but alas, be discovered inside a tureen. It was subject to fits of bewildering wrath, during which it would hide all the towels from the bath. In the night, through the house, it would aimlessly creep, in spite of the fact of its being asleep. It would carry off objects of which it grew fond, and protect them by dropping them into the pond. It came 17 years ago, and to this day, it has shown no intention of going away. So the artwork is done in pen and ink drawings. There's quite a bit of cross-hatching and shading technique, and we'll look into a little bit more of his style in the upcoming episode. The first book I chose to read was kind of a rinse and repeat iteration of the author's hypotheses about Edward Gorey, and the artist, Edward Gorey, was getting lost in the suppositions and theories of the author. I'm not sure where the editor had disappeared to, but I had to put that book aside because it was really distracting and I wanted to learn about Edward Gorey. So I ordered two other books, Gorey's Worlds, which I finished a couple of days ago, and Ascending Peculiarity. So I am hoping to share his story and a peek into the shadows of his what are often called macabre books, but they may not be, or the intention may not have been that. We'll talk about his Tony Award, his Edwardian beard, and yes, even his fur coats. Before we go, I wanted to read an article to you called Edward Gorey's Favorite Diner Isn't Spooky at All. The writer and illustrator loved Jack's Outback, a diner near his Massachusetts home, by Tove Danovich, updated February 13, 2018. It's on myrecipes.com in a section called Extra Crispy. Quote, Edward Gorey doesn't seem like an English muffin guy, but the illustrator and author of eccentric gothic works like The Gashly Crumb Tinies, The Doubtful Guest, or The Curious Sofa, A Pornographic Tale, was more than just a recluse. He loved a diner breakfast just as much as the rest of us. Today, the Edward Gorey Museum is located at the site of his home in Yarmouth Port, Massachusetts. It's a gray house, an old New England cottage that would be nondescript if it weren't for a wire statue of the doubtful guest outside. Once visitors step through the doors, it's immediately apparent that they're in Gorey's realm. It's filled with the artist's strange collections, original sketches, one of Gorey's beloved fur coats, and a photo of him entertaining at one of the dinners he liked to host for family and close friends. Among the artifacts on display is a frame filled with receipts for a month's worth of breakfasts and lunches at his favorite local restaurant, Jack's Outback. Jack's, which changed management in the early 2000s and is now known as Jack's Outback 2, was one of those small-town restaurants that rarely seem to exist anymore. Customers had to write their preferred meals down on order slips, pour their own coffee, and clean up after themselves. Jack Braggington Smith, the owner and namesake, was known for being a lovable curmudgeon. He put finished orders in the window for customers to pick up themselves, and would get angry when people left their plates sitting too long. Jack was always picking on his regulars, greeting them with a gruff, "You again?" In 2004, former fire chief David Aiken divulged a memory of when he left his radio on the counter to the Boston Globe. "When I came back for it, Jack had it up to his mouth and was saying, 'Colleen, Chiefy Weefy.' It's thanks to state law that handwritten records of Gorey's favorite breakfasts and lunches exist at all. They had to be stored on the premises for at least 2 or 3 years. But like most filing, languished much longer in boxes in the restaurant's basement. Rick Jones, one of Jack's Outback's partners and now the director of the Edward Gorey House, says he had boxes full of hundreds of these receipts, which he finally looked through while doing an exhibit on A Day in the Life of Gorey. "I picked a specific month and looked through them until I had a receipt for every day of the month," he said. On 17 occasions, Gorey ordered E.G., C.C., no B. English muffin, cream cheese, no butter. He also liked tuna salad sandwiches, grilled cheese with bacon and tomato on white bread, fruit cup on the side. 5 times he ordered 2 poached-in-a-bowl ham, which Jones explained was 2 poached eggs in a bowl with ham, though I'm not sure it clarifies what the dish looked like or why it had to be in a bowl rather than on a plate. Over time, the walls became adorned with original art from Gorey, who ate breakfast nearly every day at Jack's. Jones said it was a place where everyone came together. It put together the plumbers and actors and doctors. Those who remember Gorey's visits to Jack's always mention that he was never without a book to read, partially because he was always reading, but also as a shield of sorts. Yet Jones said he was kind to people if they wanted to get an autograph. Gorey never liked his fame, but he did like breakfast at Jack's. We'll let this prequel wrap up, and I'll get back to my researching. If you want to support the podcast, I hope you will rate and review. If you take a screenshot and send it to me at whisperingcontact@gmail.com or at Whispering Gallery Podcast on Instagram, I'll send you one of the cute acrylic Lucy pins, which is the skull, the logo for our podcast, for free. You just need to send me your name and address. And with that, I hope you'll keep your flashlights close and your spooky art stories closer. And I'll be talking to you soon as we go down the rabbit hole on the Edward Gorey mystery.